Hi, listeners. Claudia Reuter here, host of the podcast, The 43%, just back for its second season. The 43% is a show featuring the more nuanced stories of women navigating their professional and personal lives, exploring the balance between work life and home life for mothers everywhere, something often difficult to navigate, demanding, and even controversial. Around 43% of women leave the workforce at some point after having children. And I wanted to move past a lean in or lean out debate and allow women and men to hear a variety of interesting experiences from amazing women across multiple industries. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's Abadesi, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today, I'm joined by Nick Brisburn. He's the managing partner at Forward Partners, a venture fund based here in London, focused on pre-seed, seed, and early stage tech companies. You might know some of their portfolio companies like Patch Plants and Appear Here. You may also know him personally from his popular newsletter, The Equity Kicker. We cover a lot in this episode: the future of venture capital and the concept of applied venture and the resources that founders need most, the role that mindfulness plays in supporting his portfolio companies, tech trends he loathes and loves, and of course, the products on his home screen. So Nick, thank you so much for joining us today for Product Hunt Radio. Interviews with VCs are actually some of my favorite to do because so many people in our community are aspiring to be venture capitalists themselves or are desperately seeking funding and wanting to get inside the mind of decision makers like you. So I'm a huge fan of you really through the Equity Kicker, which is a newsletter I subscribed to many years ago when I wanted to find out more about venture capital. And of course, through your work at Forward Partners, huge fan of some of your portfolio companies. But for people who are listening and maybe aren't super familiar with you or the Equity Kicker or Forward Partners, please tell us who you are and what you're working on.
Thank you for the kind words. Just let me start with that. So I'm Nick Brisbane, founder and managing partner at Forward Partners. And we're an early stage VC, so pre-seed and seed stage. And what makes us different is that, as well as having what I like to think is one of the best investment teams in the business, we also run a studio team, which is there to help our portfolio companies to do whatever they need to do to grow fast and succeed. And so the kind of the insight, the idea that we had at the beginning of Forward Partners is that if we have a studio team that can help our portfolio companies, that would be a better service than other investors. And that will help us win the best deals and hopefully help the companies go on to achieve great heights, and everybody will win.
Amazing. Yeah, I watched some videos of you explaining, you know, what your vision was with Forward Partners on YouTube, which was really great. And one of the things that you said in the video I saw was how you were inspired by the likes of Andreessen Horowitz and First Round Capital to bring that style of, you know, value add investing to the UK and the Europe scene. And I just wondered, how do you define that that value add? Or really, like, can you just give us examples of how you do that at Forward Partners? Because as you rightfully said in this clip I saw, a lot of folks claim to do it, but I was curious to hear how you have executed on that at Forward Partners.
It's a great question and one I love to answer. So executing on value add as a VC is actually turns out to be pretty difficult. So at the individual partner level, you can work really hard, hustle for your companies, make introductions, be there to advise the CEO. But if you want to scale beyond that and to help with the things which particularly early stage companies need before they have big teams and more operational things, then you need a team of specialists to do that. And that brings you two challenges. So firstly, you need to find a way to a business model that allows you to pay for that. And then you need to find the people to join your team, and they have different sets of motivations to people in investment teams of venture capital funds. And so it becomes important to think about culture and really how to motivate a workforce of creatives. So that's what we've been working on now for 6 years at Forward Partners. And the things we help most with, product development and brand. So one example recently, top of the mind at the moment, is a company called Wager. So that's a friend-to-friend betting app. So you'll be able to, once they launch, hopefully in time for the start of the football season here, you'll be able to, when you're watching a football match with your friend, you'll be able to have a bet against them on your iPhone. They'll pull in the odds from the bookies, so it becomes much fairer, it becomes easier. You don't have to worry about collecting money afterwards because that all gets taken care of. You can have lead tables over time to see which of your mates is most successful in making these wages. So that was the vision of the founders, Leo and Elliot, when they came to us last September. We invested in that business in November or December. And the guys had a very clear idea of what it was and what they wanted to build. And we worked with them to do some customer research, was the first thing, to really understand the emotional drivers of customers around these products. Then we helped them design the product, figure out which feature should be in the first release. One of our designers did the UX, and then our developers have helped them build, and that's been, it's actually quite a complex app. And the good news is that it was submitted to the App Store last week, and we got approval this week, which everyone was very pleased for it to come through quickly. Gambling apps often take a long time to get approved. So we've helped them with all of that. And now as we flip into the next phase, we'll help them with marketing. They've got to find customers, continue product development as we iterate to make it work better. And then hiring their team is the other thing we've been helping them with.
That's amazing. I wanted to dive a bit deeper into that because what I hear, you have a lot of diverse folks in the team with different specialities and different areas of expertise that your founders are able to lean into. How do you then, as a leader, ensure that all those resources are available? I'm even thinking in the sort of early days of Forward Partners. I know some folks who are in the process of trying to raise a fund right now, whether it's their first or their second. And I feel like so much of what a VC has to do is find funding for the fund. And it sounds like you, on top of that, also thought, oh, and I must find talent to support the founders. How do you pull that off?
So I guess the first thing is that I spent best part of a year and a half pulling together the first fund for Forward Partners. And then so once we had started, that was already in the bank. So I was then laser focused on, how to build a great service for founders. That's the first bit. But then the second thing is, and I was lucky with this, the first investor in Forward Partners, a high net worth entrepreneur by the name of Neil Hutchinson, he was running a business called Forward Internet Group, which is where we get the Forward and Forward Partners from. So still have the heritage of Forward Internet Group to this day. Within Forward Internet Group, he had a labs business that was ideating and creating businesses and to a certain extent backing entrepreneurs with their own ideas. And so that labs team had the core of the studio team that we have today. So that allow me to get started. So you have a real chicken and egg problem if you're starting from scratch with this strategy, because on the one hand, you can't hire great people to work on your portfolio companies until you've got a portfolio. And on the other hand, you can't back startups with the promise of adding more value than anybody else until you've got a team that can do that. Anyway, so that's how we kind of cracked the problem. And then as we started to scale, I guess it's an obvious answer. We just hired a great team of people around me who can, particularly on delivering the value add at an operational level. I'm a venture capitalist by background, strategy consultant before that, spent 2 years in a startup in an operational role, but really I'm about strategy and investment and delivering amazing value add of an operational nature. I definitely needed people to help deliver on that.
Amazing. So here on the podcast, we always like to talk about the future of tech, all the different verticals, angles, and elements that form our industry and how they're progressing. One of the reasons why I was very excited to have you on the show was because you're very uniquely placed to talk about the future of venture capital. This is, of course, your own personal interest, starting a newsletter all the way back in, 2006, I think you started blogging, so well over a decade ago, into actually leading a fund now. And I know in the last issue of Equity Kicker, which I read, you spoke about this idea of how VC was evolving, particularly applied venture, which you're championing at Forward Partners. So I thought it might be great to dig in a bit deeper into that and give you the floor to share your vision of how you see the future of VC.
For me, the future of VC is one of ever-increasing value add. And you can see different iterations in the business model of venture capital funds over the years, as we've all sought to find ways to help our portfolio companies more. And I'm super keen to talk about this because the vision at Forward Partners, our vision is of a world where every founder realizes their potential. And I think where the venture capital world is heading towards applied venture, that's a phrase we're coining, that additional help that founders get from the applied venture model really helps bring other types of entrepreneur into the startup ecosystem in a way that sort of earlier iterations of venture haven't done so much. So let me explain what those iterations are. So starting at the beginning of this century, really, and particularly you could see this most clearly when some prominent VCs started to blog. You know, we had individual partners of venture capital firms working really hard for their portfolio companies, hustling, making introductions, being there for the founders. And then the next iteration came in First Round Capital. You mentioned them earlier. They were the pioneers of what's become known as the platform VC model. And so that's hiring a small number of people into your venture capital fund to help your portfolio company. And so typically those people help with recruitment strategy, introduction to agencies a lot of the time. They help with networking with other portfolio companies, maybe write some content, maybe also help with PR and introductions to PR agencies. But that's the kind of usual range. So the first platform team was set up by First Round in 2005. And as we sit here, what are we now, 14 years later, that model is very widely adopted now. I think well over half of venture capital funds have some kind of platform team. And if you look at the most successful funds, I think that fraction would be a lot higher. But then the newer model is, and that there are maybe 20 firms doing this globally, of which Forward Partners is one. But it's still sufficiently new that there isn't a widely adopted name for it. But that's what we're calling applied venture. And kind of the core idea there is, why stop at having a few people on payroll to help your portfolio companies succeed? Why not find a way to have as many as possible? That allows you to help your portfolio companies with many, many more things. And as I was saying earlier, offer a better service. And that should see the companies go on to achieve greater results. And so Andreessen Horowitz in the States, Google Ventures were both inspirations for this. OpenView Venture Partners is another one. And then Project A here in Germany, here in Europe, one of the other kind of leading examples. For me, it's a logical continuation of one person working to add value to a portfolio company, to a few, to as many as possible. And one of the reasons that I'm keen to speak about this model is that the more people understand that kind of natural progression, they see the power that it has for founders and the results that it's driving at venture capital firms, the more people will adopt the model, the more entrepreneurs will get the assistance they need, and the more every founder will realize their potential.
I love that. It sounds very logical when you paint it out, but of course there are still many firms that really are just about providing the cash. So it's great to hear that you are evolving constantly and how you go about this. Just to go a bit deeper into that, I'm quite curious to hear more about any feedback loops that you rely on to decide what you provide or what you would like to provide more of, particularly because, you know, looking at Forward Partners portfolio, for example, you've invested across a range of different verticals, folks who are focusing on a diverse range of audiences. How are you, as a leadership team and as a company, deciding where to continue putting resources or even what new resources you need to provide to support your existing and, you know, future founders?
So when we were working out which resources to offer first, we indeed had to get the whole model working. We started it with quite a small part of the overall startup landscape. So we started, well, we were investing in a slightly broader range of companies, but we focused our support on pre-seed e-commerce and pre-seed marketplace companies. And so those, both those types of businesses are broadly similar in terms of the support that they need, and nearly everything was consumer. So, you know, the help we were able to provide is some experience in how do you build an effective consumer-facing website, which is going to attract people, convert them through to becoming customers, and then same on the supply side for marketplaces. And the tech build component of that is kind of relatively similar across companies. And so, you know, so we began really with product and tech and growth, actually, was the, those are the core initial bits. And then we saw that one of the things that founders were struggling to find enough time to do effectively was recruitment. So particularly in like when you're growing very fast and you're kind of one or two people in the company and the CEO is still really just doing everything, then finding time, you know, when if you need a CTO in, so what are we now? We're in July. If you need a CTO to be in place or a lead engineer to be in place in December, then that's a process you should really start in August or September, and maybe even now. But founders, you just had so much other stuff to do that they were struggling to find the time to really kind of get prepared as early as they might. So we added support with talent acquisition as a way to kind of help people, well, recruit in a more timely fashion and recruit more effectively into their startups. And then kind of more recently, we've been, as the portfolio has matured, we've seen that there have been gaps around, as they get bigger, it's more important that the brand is fully thought through and properly developed. And so we've increased our support on the brand side. And then just last week, actually, we've hired a new head of people. And so there, we want to go beyond the talent support we provide at the moment, which is recruitment, to helping companies to develop great cultures and to make sure the founders are taking care of themselves and developing themselves and their leadership teams as effectively as they could.
I love that you've invested in head of people. Culture is something that I often see folks in our community struggling with, whether they're a founder trying to define that for themselves as they reach a period of scale and their team is growing, or whether it's individuals who are between jobs and trying to find an environment, a working environment that really aligns with their values and what they care about. I thought it might be a nice, fun juncture to reference some of the characters that have inspired the Forward Partners culture over the years. As we were saying before we started recording, I saw a presentation you did where you spoke of your computer having an Indiana Jones Lego character, Indiana Jones and Yoda. And I wanted to just ask you, you know, why these characters came to mind for you and who the other characters are that, you know, inform or inspire Forward Partners culture.
So when we think about Forward Partners culture and what we're trying to do, we're always trying to do two things. So on the one hand, we're trying to reflect what we have currently, so it feels authentic. And then on the other hand, we're trying to stretch ourselves a little bit. Okay, so this is what we are today. It feels authentic. And then where do we want to be tomorrow? And you can stretch things a little bit, but not too much. Otherwise, the culture just doesn't feel authentic to the people in the business and it doesn't take. So we went through an exercise probably in 2015, and we've done these regularly, where, you know, we took the whole team off site. We thought about what's important to us from a values perspective, what behaviors are really effective within Forward Partners, and what behaviors do we want to see more of. And of that exercise, we looked for some way of capturing that, which would help it to stay front of mind for everybody, and looked through a range of characters. Initially, we were thinking about Sherpa Tenzing. He supported Hillary, whatever he's called, the first guy to climb Everest. Because, you know, like in a way, you know, you could see Forward Partners as a Sherpa for successful founders. But we thought, yeah, that wasn't quite right. And then we eventually alighted on Indiana Jones and Yoda, because Indiana Jones captures the adventurous side of what we're doing, both with Forward Partners, a pioneering model in venture capital, and with the startups that we're working with are pioneering in one of their own industries. So that's kind of the exciting, you know, chasing down exciting futures, knocking down obstacles side of things that was part of us. But that's only part. The other part is that we're there to advise the founders that we work with, both at board level and then also at an operational level within the studio team. And that seemed to us more like Yoda. And it was kind of fun. Indie and Yoda together is a nice contrast, isn't it? And we even had a presentation internally which was entitled The Whip and the Lightsaber. We had a whip and a lightsaber in the office that were quite fun to get out, theoretically. And so that was a lot of fun, and it did work well for us for a while. But then we got together again, another offsite for Care Values again a couple of years later. And we thought, Indiana Jones and Yoda, there's still a lot of truth in that, but it doesn't capture the creative part of Forward Partners, which is, you know, really an important aspect of what we do as well. And so then we thought that actually maybe Leonardo da Vinci as an individual captured it much better. He was highly entrepreneurial himself, but also very wise, very creative. So we cleared out the Indiana Jones and the Yoda and put a big picture of Vitruvian Man on the wall. And that's where we are today. But a good example of how you can think about these things to think about artifacts, both reinforce your culture and stretch it, and then how you change those things over time to emphasize where you want to go next.
Yes, I think you're right. Particularly with your focus on authenticity, it requires that constant self-reflection and re-examination. And there is often, just as a consumer experiencing the world, a real feeling of unease when one comes into contact with a brand that doesn't accurately reflect the individuals behind it. Sometimes it's even just sort of like jumping onto a landing page and kind of going, I still don't really understand what you do. I feel like this hasn't quite been thought through. So it's nice to hear that you really use authenticity as an anchor to really inform the way you speak about your brand and the way you speak about the firm to everyone else. I feel like there's a lot to be learned from that, especially for founders who are just starting out and thinking about the kind of team that they want to grow and the kind of company that they want to build. So thank you so much for sharing that. I wanted to jump onto another topic that I know you're very interested in writing more about in the future, I'm guessing is a core part of the Forward Partners culture and maybe even your own personal life, and that is the topic of mindfulness. So in the recent episode of Equity Kicker, which I referenced earlier, you talked about how the practice of mindfulness is actually becoming a part of the toolkit that you support your portfolio founders with. I wanted to give you the floor to tell us a bit about how this came about and what that actually looks like.
So I think mindfulness is a meditation are relatively new concepts in the West, at least, and they have immense power to help us manage our stress and live happy and fulfilled lives. There's a famous guy in the meditation world in the States called Dan Harris who likes to say that, you know, once you start meditating, you become less of a jerk to yourself and less of a jerk to everybody around you.
I like that.
And that's quite, you know, and that level of he calls it 10% happier is quite accessible. But the challenge with meditation and mindfulness is that, you know, it's all relatively new. A lot of the language used around it is very mystical, hard to access. And there's very little out there which says, you know, if you do X, then you'll get Y back. And it's a lot of, you know, here's a lifestyle. You should just put as much time as you can into it. And then amazing things will happen eventually. And that is what I'd love to break down for founders. And so my experience of getting into meditation was I was kind of interested. I hadn't done anything about it for years. And it was a way, it's just before, it's the year before we got Forward Partners started, actually. And it was a way for New Year's skiing with my wife. And we were sat there on New Year's Eve. And I said, okay, this year I'm finally going to get my act together and do something about meditation. And then I got introduced to Headspace. That was shortly after Headspace had started. It got me started a little bit. And that was okay. I kind of quite enjoyed it, but it was definitely okay rather than good. And I got frustrated with it for a couple of reasons. And then, so prior to starting Forward Partners, I was a partner at a venture firm called DFJ Esprit. And it looked like I was going to have to work, finishing my work at DFJ would take me right up to the point where I had agreed to start Forward Partners. But then relatively late on, it emerged that I was going to have a four-week gap. And Fiona, my wife, said, you should make sure you do something interesting with that. And so I said, oh, that's a good shout. I'm going to go to India and meditate, which I don't think was quite what she was what she was expecting. But I took myself off there, and it was actually, so it was totally the wrong time of year to go to India, really hot. I arrived at New Delhi Airport, and there was a sign up inside saying outside temperature 44 degrees centigrade. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. And they like tried to dissuade me from coming like two or three times. But the beauty of it was, unfortunately, I don't mind the heat. And the beauty of it was that there weren't many people on the ashram where I went. And so I was able to get a lot of attention and time with the people there and get up the learning curve of meditation reasonably quickly. And I came back from there with what I'm going to call the seeds of a sustained habit. I didn't get into an everyday meditation habit immediately, but there was enough strength there that I was able to develop that over the next two or three years. And then it's kind of picked up strength from there and actually really accelerated since Christmas this year. And so at Christmas this year, as things accelerated for me, and that was getting real kind of clarity on my emotions, and that was giving me, making me better able to regulate my emotions, understand where I was coming from, not react quickly to things, and generally be more effective at work and be a better dad and husband, I hope at least. So I was thinking, okay, I really want to do more of this. I really want to understand this more myself, and I think there's something valuable there for our portfolio, for our CEOs in particular. And the obvious thing to do, therefore, is to try and find a way to build a service for the founders in the Forward Partners portfolio, and ultimately, I hope founders more generally, which will help them, you know, give them a sort of kickstart so they can get onto that on-ramp and get those seeds sown so they can develop a sustainable meditation, mindfulness meditation habit of their own. And so that was 6 months ago, obviously 7 months now. And so I've been investigating that, and both in terms of what we might be able to do, you know, and how to really define things so that, you know, there's a clear ask for entrepreneurs. So, you know, like if you engage with this, this is how much time it's going to be going to have to put in and for how long. And then this is what you can expect to get out so that they can make proper decisions about whether it's worth allocating their time to. Because part of this process, we spoke to a number of the founders in their portfolio, and they, you know, a lot of them said, well, they all said, actually, every single one said, I've heard a lot about mindfulness and meditation. I think that there's a lot for me there. And they nearly all said, and I've tried to develop a habit and I'm really keen to do more, but I don't know how, you know, the tools aren't there. The language isn't clear. I've tried Headspace maybe, but it didn't work. One said, I'm just too busy. I'm sacrificing everything for my startup, including my sleep. And if I had more time, then I would sleep more. And then if I had more time after that, I would exercise more. And if I had more time after that, then maybe I'll meditate. but the others were, as I was framing it by then, so I was saying, look, if I put together a course, will you put 8 hours of your time into that over a six-week period and commit five, so 4 two-hour blocks, and then commit 5 minutes a day in between times? Probably 80-90% of them said yes, that is a time commitment I would put in with the hope of getting sustained meditation habit out the back end. And that idea for a course has been inspired partly by Google, who run an internal course which has parameters that kind of look like that, and partly by a lady I got introduced to called Dana Zalika, who hopefully will be the one who helps us run this course for our founders. And there's some amazing stats about how powerful meditation is and how quickly it can make a difference. But one of my favorites is there's a US biotech company, and with about 200 employees, so like highly stressful environment, they ran an 8-week mindfulness course for their employees, which some of them did, some of them didn't. And after 8 weeks, they scanned the brains, so the MRI scans of the people who'd been on the mindfulness course and also some people who hadn't, and the happiness centers in the brains of the people who've been on the mindfulness course were noticeably more active just after 8 weeks. And perhaps even, this is my favorite one, it was also autumn, so it was flu jab time. And so they monitored the response of the flu jab to the, you know, looked at the differences between the mindfulness group and the people who hadn't done the mindfulness course. And after just 8 weeks of mindfulness training, people had stronger antibody responses to the influenza jab than people who didn't. So their immune systems were measurably better after just 8 weeks. And so
amazing.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable what you can do. And so, so I'm excited about the potential to introduce more people to that and help more people to be nicer to themselves and everyone around them.
Yes, definitely. I can totally empathize with this idea of not having enough time to meditate. Meditation often comes up a lot in discussions we have in the Product Hunt community as well. We might be talking about how we stay productive, how we stay motivated, how we find that perfect work-life balance. And always someone will mention carving out time for meditation. And always someone will reply, oh, I tried it, but it wasn't for me, or I don't have time, or I couldn't get into it. I was absolutely one of those people. I remember first being advised to practice mindfulness or meditation by, you know, a very good friend's parent who'd just been getting into it, and she got me the book and gave me the CD. This is how long ago it was. It was on a CD. And I remember putting it into my laptop and listening to one of them and just going, I just don't know. But in the years since then, similar to you, I tried Headspace for a bit. I love Simple Habit, which is a great app. You know, their tagline is a daily vacation for your mind. And the funny thing about meditating, which you, I'm sure, will agree with, is it actually creates more time in your day, because by finding that time to be fully present and find stillness in your mind, you're able to find that stillness again throughout the course of the day. And we live in very distracting times. There's always something that needs our attention or a push notification popping up somewhere. And that ability to hone in on exactly what it is you need to focus on right now, I find helps me be far more productive than I would be if I didn't meditate and I didn't have that ability, or if I couldn't flex that muscle, if that makes sense.
Totally agree. And I struggle to get real clarity on some of those points through my own practice. And one of the things which helped catapult what I'm doing for myself was when I read a book by Shinzen Young called Science of Enlightenment. He's an American guy now, but now a Japanese Buddhist monk, or Buddhist monk in the Japanese tradition. And he said, look, the purpose of your meditation is to develop concentration, sensory clarity, and equanimity. And that, those three things, when you look at them separately, talk to a lot of the benefits you were just describing. You know, it is the ability to concentrate. It's the ability to draw your focus back, your concentration back to the one thing that you should be focusing on. And focusing on the breath, which is the core of a lot of meditation practices, the core of my meditation practice, is a hard thing, right? Breath is dull, it's repetitive, and so your mind wanders, and being able to bring it back, that, you know, you're training your mind to be able to come back when it gets distracted. So that's powerful. And then you can use that concentration to identify you, as I was saying a bit earlier, to identify and separate your emotions, particularly to feel them in different places in your body, which makes you better able to respond to difficult situations. And as a startup founder, as an entrepreneur, and you've got any number of these really hard situations, you know, and it's so difficult when your startup, particularly in the very early days, it's fragile. There's any number of things could go wrong. There's threats coming in left, right, and center. And so something comes in that threatens your company and it fires off all sorts of reactions inside you. And so being able to kind of have some clarity on what those different reactions are, separate out the different emotions, makes them all much less powerful. So the way Shinzen Young describes it, when they're all bundled up together, they multiply. If you can identify them separately, it's more addition, so therefore much easier to deal with. And then the third piece of that is then equanimity. You're then able to say, okay, I'm going to respond to these different stimuli with equanimity. I'm not going to judge them, not going to pull towards them or push away from them. Instantly, I'm going to have a considered reaction as to what is my best response here. You know, what is best going to deliver my long-term goal, which may be, well, it's almost never to get angry, get upset, which is where your emotions can take you if you don't keep them if you have less clarity.
Yes, I love that. I often wonder, we were talking about this the last time our team were all together. We were a fully distributed team, but we were together in San Francisco in June for an on-site. And we were doing a lot of presentations, a lot of public speaking. And I was just having a conversation with some of my colleagues around, you know, controlling nerves before addressing a big audience. And I talked about how, you know, sometimes just taking a few deep breaths can actually be a very powerful and very grounding exercise. And I started to think of how many other situations are improved when one just breathes better or slower or more appropriately. Same kind of thing with sports, if you're thinking of running or even with yoga. And then I just kind of wondered to myself, why didn't we learn that at school? I feel like I would have used that more than Pythagoras' theorem.
I know. And it just doesn't sit well with Western education at all. And so even with my kids are 12 and 14 now, and they joke about my meditation and my mindfulness, and I'm succeeding in getting them interested in it a bit. But, you know, compared to everything they see at school and on TV, it's still very esoteric. And it, you know, it's in danger of falling into the weird camp.
Well, at least you're trying. So I wanted to switch gears a little bit. One of the great things about this podcast is that we get such a broad range of folks who are influencing and shaping our industry. And I would love to know, perhaps reflecting on some of the companies in your portfolio, what are some things about tech that you're really excited about these days?
So this was one of the questions you sent through, and there's lots of areas of tech that are exciting. But what I wanted to say is really what's most exciting for me is the way that the entrepreneurship or startup ecosystem is growing and growing. You know, the world is changing faster and faster. We've got bigger and bigger problems to solve, and it's entrepreneurs that are going to be solving those problems for us on a global level. And so the more successful entrepreneurs we have, the faster the world's problems get solved, the more economic growth we have. And so that's what's exciting to me at the moment. You know, you look at the growth of the startup ecosystem, you know, and flipping back to Forward Partners and Applied Venture. I think that's why it's so important that the venture capital ecosystem evolves to be able to support more and more types of founders. At the moment, we're a bit in danger of skewing too heavily towards companies chasing massive outcomes, you know, billion or even $10 billion plus outcomes. Now, you know, nothing wrong with those businesses. We've got a few of those in our portfolio growing into those sort of valuations, I hope. So there's nothing wrong with that. But there's this other part of the market, which I think is important that we serve as well.
Yes, I think you're right. And I just wondered, like, do you look for the impact aspect of missions when founders come to you to pitch? Or do you, you know, apply that principle and just sort of think, yes, what will be the impact on the world? Or, you know, what is the scope of the problem that they're solving when they come to you or your team?
So we definitely look and think about the impact of the companies we back will have on the world. So when we were getting ready for the second fund, so I guess in the 2016 timeframe, we even stopped and thought then, should we have a dedicated impact fund? So a fund that only invests in companies that are going to have a positive social impact. And we decided against that in the end. You know, that's something like philosophically we would have liked to have done. We decided against that because there just isn't enough startups with venture scale potential that really tick the impact box in an authentic way. To build a big fund and do that. So, you know, so we don't have an exclusively impact focused fund, but we do like companies that have an impact. We're human. We would like to be doing some good in the world here, everyone at Forward Partners. And then B, also, you know, companies which are making good impact, have a very solid mission, are able to build, more easily able to build those authentic brands you were describing before and go on to become big successful businesses. So we've got one in the portfolio, a company called Koru Kids, which is a marketplace for childcare services. And that, I don't know what it's like in San Francisco, but here in the UK, that childcare is a mess. It's really hard for parents to find people to look after their kids. And that stops a lot of people going back to work once they've had kids. One or two, people end up going for overpriced or very expensive options, which don't have that high quality, which then add a lot of stress into people's lives, both for the children and for the parents. And so what Koru Kids are doing is bringing a lot of new supply, new nannies into the ecosystem by training them and using tech to help them be effective in their jobs and organizing nanny shares in order to make the pricing work for whole groups of people that previously couldn't afford childcare. And so that's a a good example of something which has an impact, is solving a really important problem for the world, and the sort of thing that we'd like to get behind.
Amazing. On the same vein, when you think of the future of tech and trends that you've observed or read about, heard about, is there anything that concerns you?
Yeah, so tech is, so everything has good, everything of any scale at least has good and bad components to it. And that's very obviously true of the tech ecosystem. And kind of what's been interesting over the last 5 years, I suppose, is that, you know, if you look at companies like Google and Facebook, the good and the bad sides of what they do has become increasingly obvious, and the leaderships of those businesses have started to address that directly. And prior to that, they were almost wanting to duck some of these issues, really. So like, we provide the tools. What happens on our platforms is down to the people that are on them, not down to us for providing the tools, which, you know, certainly from a European perspective, never really sits that well. Like, I think we all have responsibilities for the impact that we have on the world. And so if you're running a big platform with billions of people using it, then you have to stick your hand up and say, okay, it does matter to me what people do on the platform. And so, you know, our opportunity is to understand that there's good and there's bad in tech, and to think intelligently about how do we maximize the good and minimize the bad components. And I do think that careful thought is required. I don't think that, you know, it's like a genie. Once it's out of the bottle, you can't put it back in. And so kind of shutting things down will only result in them popping up elsewhere and maybe less in environments where it's less easy to influence the direction that they take. And so kind of carefully thought through regulation. There's a bit of a tendency towards knee-jerk regulation. It's hard to understand the details of all of this stuff. And so that kind of promotes fear. And then you have these knee-jerk reactions. So all of that's difficult. So, you know, so what does that mean in practice? It means that I think it's absolutely right that we are starting to think about what Google and Facebook are doing and the responsibilities they should have in order to make sure that bad behavior doesn't happen on their platforms. I think that some of the more obvious solutions, like forcing them to split parts of their business from one another, or killing their business models or really hurting their business models by stopping information sharing in a kind of draconian fashion, those are probably not the right solutions. But so I'm saying we just need to kind of think this stuff through more carefully and then make sure that we do come up with more considered responses.
Definitely. Thanks so much for sharing that. Well, we've come to my favorite part of the podcast. Being a product-loving community here at Product Hunt, we cannot let our guests go without sharing a bit about the products that they love. These might be the apps that are on your home screen, the productivity tools that help your team stay on top of their goals, or just something new that you've been playing with, hardware or software that you love. But this is where I give you the floor to talk about it.
What works really well for us here, from a culture and kind of helping manage the operations, are we use a bit of OKR software called 7Geese, and we couple that with a bit of review software or a service called Small Improvements that we use to capture our reviews. And so we run a quarterly review process here. And so those two things together help us to just manage efficient operations, where we clearly articulate what our goals are on a 5-year, 3-year, 1-year basis, and translate those down into quarterly OKRs. And everybody can see how what they do contributes to the organization goals. They can see what everybody else is doing to make sure that we're coordinated and not overlapping with one another. And so those are tools that I like. At a personal level, so interesting journey for me. If you've looked at my kind of early blogs or some of the stuff I was saying a few years ago, I was really, I love open systems, and that made me very anti-Apple in the early days. But I've been sucked entirely into the Apple ecosystem, and it's my Apple Watch, which is really not a very exciting thing to say these days, is it? But using that to track my runs, in particular, has just become, it's a tool that gets better and better all the time, and it's been super helpful for me recently.
Classic tech uniform. Well, Nick, so for anyone who's listening and wants to find out more about you, the projects that you've mentioned, or maybe even wants to apply for some funding, where can they find you?
So if you go to the Forward Partners website, so forwardpartners.com, then there's multiple ways to get in contact there. And particularly we run an office hours program, so we do that once every 6 weeks or so, where we'll meet with 25, 30 companies for 15 minutes each. And so that's a really good way to get in contact with us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us on Product Hunt Radio.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into Product Hunt Radio. I've got a favor to ask you. Will you take a minute to review us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to us right now? Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.